have a discussion that is where we all have a part of the discussion. And so I'd like us to look at the idea of lead like a heretic, and to do it in a way that is helpful for us to be able to see our role, particularly as followers of Jesus. And so I come to my grandkids because they teach me more than I ever learned before, apparently. So Silas, who is six, was telling me about his school. He's going to a new school in California. And so I said, "Well, how's it going?" And Silas said, "Well, it's a good school. It's a good school. And sometimes I have to go to the calm corner." And I said, "The calm corner?" He said, "Yeah, sometimes when I just feel out of control, I have to go to the calm corner and blow at a pinwheel." And he said, "Really helps." And as I look at contemporary culture, particularly political culture right at the moment, we really need a ton of pinwheels. I think there's a market here for pinwheels. Winter bites, yeah, okay. So I think it's really helpful to be able to have that calm corner kind of attitude that enables us to talk to each other. So today I want to present to you a little bit of what I've learned and what I'm doing. And then open it up to be able to discuss whatever comes. Because my own sense of the gospel is that we can't plan it all out. Let me start with the scripture, and because I think that's really important, because it's really about the nature of Jesus. And if you can just pass these along. I've left the backs blank in case you want to make notes. I notice in seminars that's what people do these days. The first thing they do is they check and see if it's note paper and not just something in the seminar. And this is from Matthew, and it's in the Message version, and I find that helpful in terms of understanding it in language that I particularly understand, and you may want to compare it in your own mind to other translations and so forth, but I find the Message to be really, really helpful. So I just want to look at this, and I'd ask if there was one person who could read the first part and someone to read Love Your Enemies. Is there someone who could help us with that?
I'll read the first one.
Sure.
Okay. "Don't suppose for a minute that I've come to demolish the scriptures, either God's law or the prophets. I'm not here to demolish, but to complete. I'm going to put it all together, pull it all together in a vast panorama. God's law is more real and lasting than the stars in the sky and the ground at your feet. Long after the stars burn out and earth wears out, God's law will be alive and working. Trivialize even the smallest item in God's law, and you'll only have trivialized yourself. But take it seriously, show the way for others, and you'll find honor in the kingdom. Unless you do far better than the Pharisees in the matters of right living, you won't know the first thing about entering the kingdom."
You're looking for a volunteer for the second part?
Yes.
I'll read it.
Okay.
"Love your enemies. Here's another old saying that deserves a second look. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth.
is that going to get us anywhere? Here's what I propose. Don't hit back at all. If someone strikes you, stand there and take it. If someone drags you into court and sues for the shirt off your back, gift wrap your best coat and make a present of it. And if someone takes unfair advantage of you, use the occasion to practice the servant life. No more tit-for-tat stuff. Live generously. You're familiar with the old written law, love your neighbor or love your friend, and its unwritten companion, hate your enemy. I'm challenging that. I'm telling you to love your enemies. Let them bring out the best in you, not the worst. When someone gives you a hard time, respond with the energies of prayer, for then you are working out of your own true selves, your God-created self. This is what God does. He gives his best, the sun to warm and the rain to nourish, to everyone, regardless, the good and bad, the nice and nasty. If all you do is love the lovable, do you expect a bonus? Anybody can do that. You simply say hello to those who greet you. Do you expect a medal? Any run-of-the-mill sinner does that. In a word, what I'm saying is, grow up. Your kingdom subjects. Now, live like it. Live out your God-created identity. Live generously and graciously toward others, the way God lives towards you.
Thank you. The reason I asked other people to read is because I think we need to hear different voices. We need to be able to listen in a way that's not only effective, but is helpful to the other. And I think as I look at this community, now Mary June told me that Epworth was heaven. And I think there is a sense in which this is heaven. It is also a portion of real struggle of saying, okay, what are we today? What were we yesterday? And the interpretations of that. And then to ask the challenging question is, what is Epworth going to be in the future? And I think this is the passage that seemed to me as I was thinking and praying about this for today is that's a critical question. It's always a critical question about what's next. And if you don't ask the question, what next, you're probably going to be out of business. And so that really sparked, this passage was the passage that sparked my interest in saying, who is this Jesus that challenges almost every rule? In the old translations, it was, you have heard that it was said, but I say to you. And that's the but part that really is anxiety producing, especially in the church. You try to change something in the church, especially in worship, and you know what I mean. You have heard that it was said, love those who are with you and hate the enemy. And I say exactly the opposite. Sounds a bit like a teenager to me. But that seemed to me the Jesus that I was seeing as I read and reread the New Testament. And this sparked a whole conversation that became an art project. It was as if I was going into new territory. I don't know if you know the book Plato and Platypus Walk into a Bar. It's an interesting little book. Understanding Philosophy Through Jokes. It's actually very, very good. And I bought it for 50 cents at the Restore shop in Ludington. Then I opened it up to this first page, and it says, to the memory of our philosophical grandfather, Groucho Marx, who summed up our basic ideology when he said, these are my principles. If you don't like them, I have others. And you know, that seems to me a part of the thing that when you have principles, you're going to be always in trouble because you have to keep those principles and sometimes have to reevaluate those principles and say, what is it that I really believe? And so I went because I knew a gentleman, an artist, Willis Wheatley, And I sat with him back in the 70s when he was making four drawings, one of which became pretty famous. And the one that here is this one. Maybe you recognize this one. It's called The Laughing Christ. And I remember Willis saying to me, you know, that's the last one. And as I began looking at this passage, I thought about Willis and the nature of this one, which is called Jesus Christ Liberator. I have a 20 by 24 poster in my office at home that I look at, and that's been the inspiration for this new book that I've just completed. But this is only the tip of the iceberg. I want you each to have a copy of this. Please. And somehow what we do in the Christian faith is we look at this last one as if that's the end and forget the beginning of what was happening. And so I'd like to share with you the other three images. And this you'll have a complete set for. You can't reproduce it, by the way, because if you do, then I get in trouble. But we have permission for today to use these drawings. So it's not about artistic validity. It isn't about anything like that, although there is a wonder about the nature of that. But let me give you the first one. And I'd like, this is the one, Jesus Christ, God become man. This was in the early days, and so it's not terribly inclusive, but he was a man, and so it seems to be appropriate. And have the first one, because when you look at the nature of heresy, which is really going against the grain, is challenging the status quo, is swimming against the current, all those expressions that we know of, and it's about the nature of principle, as Groucho Marx says, and it's also about how you live out those principles. And so God becomes man, God is incarnate, and God is with us. And I'd like you to look into the eyes of Jesus in that first one, God become man, and tell me what you see. I've done this with a number of groups, and it's always fascinating to me what some people catch and others don't. It's a bit like going along by Lincoln Lake and then going on the path and turning toward the woods there. And you, all you see is trees. But if you have the sense of God's Spirit, in a way, you move closer and you realize there's an eagle on a branch. And if you didn't notice, you missed it. And I think part of being God's person today in the world is being a really good noticer. That you really begin to notice where the needs are and where your passions are and when they collide and when they coalesce. So tell me what you see when you look into the eyes of this Jesus, as Willis drew.
I see a certain sadness in the eyes. There's a compassion.
Say more about that, if you can. Yes.
The way it's projected to me, I can see that he's, that he knows what's going on and he feels it.
Yeah, this isn't the baby Jesus. This is more or less, as Willis describes it, at the beginning of his ministry. I relate to that. Maybe others do too. When you're first ordained and you're ready to change the world and then realize that it's a bigger world than you had anticipated.
You know what? This is something that I don't think ever occurred to me before. I think in this picture, he looks like he's about 45 and in earthly terms. And most of the paintings I've ever seen of Jesus depict him as a sort of a mature, middle-aged man and not a 30-year-old.
So is that what wisdom does to your face? Is that where that comes from?
Is that what he what?
Is that what wisdom does to your face? That you will go
yeah, maybe.
More?
Yeah, maybe.
Release
your
son.
Yeah.
It's funny because there's not the wrinkles. interesting. I mean, just, that's the wrinkles that you see. I mean, I would have thought older than 45. I see age-old wisdom.
Hmm. Yeah, Anne.
Well, I just think it looks like it's not a judging face. You know, it's an accepting face, a loving face. And you know, I just remember that he said he did not come into the world to judge the world, but that the world made him safe through him.
Yeah, and coming from an attorney, that really is a good idea. Yes, absolutely.
I see shepherd eyes. Watching, waiting, looking, seeking, searching. There's a shepherd right there.
I never thought of that, but it's really in line with where my thinking has gone in terms of looking at heresy. And you have to have a foundation somewhere to move from. As Bob and I were talking about before, it's about risk. And if you haven't got that foundation, then you probably don't risk. But if there is some sense of having that in your DNA, then the chances are you will be able to take more risks. Let me share with you the second one. It's called Jesus Christ Revolutionary. And this one, again, and you may want to compare. People have had some success in being putting them one beside each other. Some of you are better at art than I am. I got into trouble when I was in grade school because I painted my apple purple. And my teacher, Mrs. Helka, told me there were no purple apples in the world. And for a long time, I never drew an apple. And in some cases, when I was invited to do some kind of drawing, I would say, "Damn apple," and so you know, and it happens now even with my master's students, who I ask, you know, why don't you contribute to answering questions? And they say, "Because we don't want to be wrong." And these are people in their late 30s and early 40s who are telling me they don't answer because they might be wrong. So this foundation that you see in the face of Jesus, I think, is really, really critical in terms of his later life. So that you have this Jesus Christ Revolutionary. So now what do you see in this Jesus? Yeah. Yes.
If that's what it is, to my mind, he's just getting started because he doesn't look angry enough yet.
Mm. He's great. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Doesn't he still have the shepherd eyes? Even though I think he's yelling at somebody too, I think he's upset. But those shepherd eyes, they do look sad, but there's still that deep, deep looking into somebody kind of eyes. They aren't just, you know. Bill can tell if I'm mad when he walks in the house because my eyes are flashing. I don't see that. I see still the gentle eyes, even though his mouth is very different.
He's calling people out, but it looks like, you know, it doesn't look like it's an out-and-out argument yet to me.
Well, kind of like it's against his character, but this is what you've pushed me to. You know, I don't like doing this, but...
But he looks disheveled, almost as if he's rubbed his, you know, taken his hands through his hair, going, like he wants to pull his hair out, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
It actually makes me upset. This one.
Did he start talking to you? Is that...
No, I just that's what we cause him to do every day, probably.
Hmm.
Or maybe to the disciples.
Yeah.
How hard is it?
But is anger appropriate for Jesus? I guess that's part of
human righteous anger.
Ah, there's the key.
Maybe it's frustration. Mm-hmm. And anger.
Yeah.
Listen to me. I'm telling you how it's supposed to be.
Hmm. You can already see, I hope, that taking the Jesus Christ Liberator as the only way to look at Jesus is so minimal compared to what Jesus is in his completeness. And it's the same for us, I think. And as I've meditated on these images, I have a sense of Jesus that's has a multiplicity of tentacles. There's not just one image of Jesus that does it for all time, and that it's okay in some way to be the shepherd. It's okay to be the one who calls out. It's okay to do that, but it has its consequences, and that's what Willis. And the most striking for me is this image of Jesus Christ sufferer. Now you'll have a complete set with four of them. And this is the one that I think for me is the one that we in some ways diminish, because it's the most difficult one to work through and deal with. Because within the nature of Jesus to be the one who comes to be with us and to help us, there is this sense now of the revolutionary, but then there are consequences. My experience teaches me that leaders particularly do not take risks when they don't see the end in view. And Jesus, it seemed to me, from the very beginning, Willis caught the sense of Jesus that I am with you always to the end of the age. And so that provides the foundation, like a kite. If you don't have that, the kite can go wherever and it's gone. But suffering is the nature of our life. Not that we cause suffering, but that we want to alleviate it in some way. So tell me what you see now in this Jesus.
Well, maybe somebody said this. I don't know. I was concentrating on the picture, but he's suffering. But what I see more is sadness.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Others have that sense.
Somebody said that.
Yeah.
Mm.
that it's all a piece of the puzzle, a much bigger puzzle.
It's interesting, in the comparing the four, this is the only one where his head is down. The others, he's either looking straight forward, or his head is turned askew, or he's looking up. And also the eyes are so different because they're not as open. And I just think there's some melancholy there in the eyes. But I just feel like the body language to me is an important part. I don't think of Jesus looking down so much, but he is here.
And maybe it's because of lack of blood. You know, I don't see where any blood is drawn. But it made me look at the crown of thorns, and it seems like he's just wearing that crown as a crown, like he's always has.
Hmm.
That it's not, a painful kind of thing, but that, you know, he is the King of Kings.
Hmm. So it's an affirmation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good insight. Willis Wheatley went to seminary. He was in the United Church of Canada. That's where I met him. And he said, as an artist, he did not want to be ordained. He thought that would be a curse on him. I never understood that exactly. I mean, most of the time when we sat together over coffee, it was he was sketching the whole time. I mean, and so I literally saw the scratchings before I ever saw these. These are much more cleaned up. I would prefer the ones that I saw early on. He was a gentleman. He was married, had three children, and yet he was just a very, very close friend, and he wasn't. He actually, in some ways, now that you ask that, Mary June, it's that he was, in some ways, a personification of the four things that he could see. And the United Church of Canada did not want to publish these four images, especially the one about sufferer. And so there was a whole lot of stuff that went on to get them all published together. And even today there is a concern about the rights. You'll see at the bottom that it's our church that had to seek permission to use the images. Yeah. Yes, I'm not sure what happened there. All I know is that it just about broke his heart.
I know what he does now.
He's dead. Well, I don't know what he's doing now. he's got very big canvases. That's what all. Well, and that's the thing for Willis. I never thought about this a whole lot, but for Willis, it was seeing the face of Jesus in the other.